that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape,
well, you better hit that.
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Chimwits. So Misha's been asking for you.
Of course.
Yeah, you've been MIA at the gym.
Yeah, again. It's just been very hard for me to get there. I haven't not been working out. I've been going to my gym next door, but just taking the train down there and giving that level of time. Remember, it's like at least a three and a half hour commitment to go there, as opposed to just next door and working out for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And just for everyone out there who's wondering, Misha's like 6'10", 370 pounds,
he's
world strong man, like wants me to hold pads and then kicks as hard as he can.
Most of that was false, but that last part was pretty true. And Justin had the bruises to show for it.
I did.
Yeah. I can understand not wanting to go because of that, but no. Misha's a nice guy and listens to the podcast. So,
he does. He's a big Chimwits fan.
Yeah, he is.
So Misha, thanks for listening.
If an episode doesn't go up Monday afternoon, I get a message on Facebook like, what's going on? Where's the new episode?
You know what I love about Misha? He's always quick to tell me when technically something hasn't gone right. He's like, yeah, you know that the levels were a little bit off. Yeah. I'm like, oh, great. Thanks for letting me know.
No, we need that.
No, I know.
That means he's listening.
Yeah, it's
true. He's not just paying lip service or telling it. So that's good.
All right. So I hear you have an interesting study to share with all of us.
Yes. So we do these episodes every once in a while. We share interesting studies. But since we've been unable to do this as much as I'd like, I'm just going to start talking about them during the show. So we got an interesting study in the news. Also, it's got to be in, that's the title, but it's got to be something that we want to talk about. But something to think about. When we've talked before about how exercise affects your cognitive abilities. And so this is a study in the Journal of Alzheimer's. And basically, so there are carriers of a, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this right, but a polyprotein E. And people that carry that.
It's like a polypoprotein.
A polypoprotein E. And carriers of that are more likely, or they're kind of genetically predisposed to developing Alzheimer's. So basically in this study, the study tracked six. And so now also this is rare in people. So it's not, this isn't commonly found, but people with that have a higher increased rate. So the study tracked 1,600 Canadians over 5 years, and it found that sedentary adults had the same risk of developing dementia as those that were genetically predisposed. So basically inactivity in itself can increase the risk in the general population, especially when there a very small percentage of the population are actually genetically predisposed.
So now, am I seeing this right, that we have in our notes here that says that most adults have the gene?
No, sorry. Most adults do not have the gene.
Oh, they do not have the gene. Okay,
so higher activity, a greater activity level will help to fight against it.
So now, if you say you do have the gene, if you are predisposed to this, how important is activity?
I have no idea. I'm assuming it can't hurt, but that wasn't part of the study.
Wouldn't you figure that would be part of the study?
I'm sure it would, but... You got to look at every study.
They're focused
on different things. So,
it's a study for the people.
So, I mean, this was an overall thing. So, yeah, it'd be a different thing. That would be a whole different study you're specifically focused on people with that gene.
With that gene. Yeah. So, it's basically saying if you are inactive... You are an inactive adult. It's almost like giving yourself that gene.
You basically give. Yeah, exactly. That's it. Mm. So just again, as we've talked about many times, exercise doesn't only apply to your fitness and your mortality, but your cognitive function and fights against many diseases. We're finding out more and more it applies to all aspects of life. So
don't forget what we had mentioned we had previously done a podcast where we talked about some of these ideas that fitness and activity actually helps your cognitive strength more than so-called brain exercises, which seem to be crazy speak. It's like, oh, how you would figure that, you know, playing chess, doing puzzles and all that stuff would actually, you know, help your thinking. And I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
I'm sure it does. But the science has shown that the activity actually helps more.
Yeah.
That it can prevent, you know, dementia and all those horrible afflictions.
Yeah. So, what do we have on tap for today?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to talk about?
So, 15 years ago when I was really first, you know, it was probably even a little bit more. It was maybe more 17, 18 years ago, like we very first time we were getting into working out.
Oh, then that would be like, we were like 16. We were
like 16. So, yeah, yeah. So like 19, 18 years ago, yeah. Something like that. So when you first get into lifting weights, working out, right, especially
how many
as a teenager,
people are doing the math right now to figure out our age?
How old we are. Like, we talked about how old we are.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying. Someone doesn't like, you know, start, okay, 19 plus 15 or 16 years old. Plus, okay, whatever. Sorry.
So I don't know if so you did, but sorry. I used to buy Flex magazine, like a bodybuilding magazines, just to sort of dream and to get into it and to be inspired. And I remember reading an article on Weekend Warriors, and it basically said you can achieve the body you want, and then it gave some random workout that, you know, what a Weekend Warriors. But what was, I'm sure, might have been somewhat misleading was the picture that it showed this bodybuilder working out. And then had the article next to it, Weekend Warriors.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, so this guy is a weekend warrior? He looks like a professional bodybuilder to me. Yeah. So if you can achieve that body with just 2 days a week or just working out on the weekends, wow, that could be really good. Why would I have to work out during the rest of the week? Yeah. I kept it in my mind that I don't know if I really buy this.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a little discussion on the Weekend Warriors.
Yeah. So basically, I had a client come to me a couple days ago. About a week ago. And he was like, did you hear about the new thing? The Weekend Warrior workout. And I had not heard. I mean, we've heard of Weekend Warriors, obviously, since we started working out. It's never, you know, it's not a new thing. But for a long time, it was kind of a joke. Like, the Weekend Warrior is a joke. You know, the person who works 9 to 5, has kids, can't work out during the week, and then they run to the gym and do all their exercise during the week. But there was an article that was out in the Times. It was based on many other sources, but it was based on a study that was kind of looking at whether or not kind of the being a quote weekend warrior is good for you, is bad for you, is better than being, you know, normal exercise. And when he said it, the way that he said it, and then looking at it, we're almost like kind of preemptively stopping the fitness industry, not that we'll stop it, but addressing the fitness industry, kind of embellishing on whatever the results of the study
were. You just know it's coming.
Yeah. So then I thought, you know, it would make a good, just to talk about what is a weekend warrior, what's required if you're forced to be a weekend warrior, and really what can you expect if you are a weekend warrior. So I guess that's kind of where we're going to go with this episode. So I guess the first thing is, tell me, what do you think, what's a weekend warrior off the top of your head without looking at the notes?
Well, clearly it's someone who can't get to the gym, can't do really anything but work and be with their family during the week. So on the weekend, they do their thing. And really, a weekend warrior applies to anyone in any hobby that wants to do that. Let's say you're really into skiing. Yeah. So you go skiing on the weekend, or you like playing music. So then you play with your band on the weekend. You're a weekend warrior for whatever the thing that you love to do.
Yeah.
And it's just so perfect for today that the fitness industry would try to capitalize off of that.
Yeah. Well, we don't know that it is, but the fitness industry is based on what's the new big thing. And so when he said that, and I read a couple of the articles based on it, I thought, okay, this is going to be something that you'll hear about.
Well, think about it works perfectly, because there's people are so busy nowadays, right? There's so much that's taking up our time, and we can't get to the gym during the week. We have family, we have work, we have this. So there's a huge demographic of people that are like that.
Yeah.
And whenever there's a huge demographic of people, there's going to be someone or something that's trying to capitalize.
And does bingo. All the...
Now, remember we talked about, what was it, the 2-minute workout?
Yeah.
Doesn't it sort of sound like the same?
It can. So we'll talk about that a little bit. So basically, first thing, you're close on the weekend warrior definition. We're going to go with the kind of a more technical definition. I guess before we talk about the definition, first thing you want to understand is there are kind of, the CDC kind of has its own exercise requirements. Like, what's the base minimum exercise for good health, right? So, and most of what we talk about is always going to refer to it with this amount of exercise in mind. So weekly, it's either 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week. So that could be kind of, you know, fast walking, gardening is considered, it can be harder than sitting and watching TV. So, but there's, you know, kind of moderate activity, right?
Okay.
Or 75 minutes of vigorous activity. So again, when we refer to like the exercise standards, this is our baseline. This is where we're starting from. So A weekend warrior is basically somebody who crams that exercise into the weekend so that they do all of that on 1 or 2 days over the weekend. So when we're talking about the weekend, we're talking about that. And again, it'll come when we get later on into this, we'll explain, you know, why it's important that definition is, we stick to that definition of weekend warrior. But that's what a weekend warrior would be. So does it make sense?
Oh, yeah. Cool. And we had a question once from a guy who was a weekend
warrior. Exactly. Yeah,
asking what he should do because he was looking to build size.
Yeah, exactly.
And we had actually made some suggestions of how he could enhance his overall workout and just his overall lifestyle.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that a little bit as well. Yep, so I guess we just mentioned it, and it might be a little obvious, but it would probably apply to your, you know, 9-to-5ers or maybe even more your 9-to-9ers, people who are working and have a family.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many people who are in situations where they have, you know, one job or two jobs, family obligations, other obligations that keep them away from the gym throughout the week. And the weekend, we tend to have a little bit more time on our hands. And so there are many people who benefit from this, who can. And for some, there are people who aren't weekend warriors because they almost self-defeatingly, they're like, oh, well, if I can't do it during the week, the weekend's not going to be enough, and they don't do it. So so that's why it's also important to find out or figure out if it's effective. So you have that. And then also, according to the CDC, only 20% of people, adults, meet the requirement. So that 150 moderate or 75 vigorous minutes of exercise, like it's a tiny number when you consider it. So any way we can get people to meet it is important. You
know, rates in this country.
Yeah. So, you know, so basically the weekend for many people can be the time to actually get your exercise in. So that was the important part. And so, you know, there's been a lot of research. There's one big study that came out recently, and that was kind of that's where the New York Times article was based on. But there's been a lot, you know, there's actually been other research out there that does show that it is pretty effective to be a weekend warrior. So now the one that came out recently that was the one in the Times was by JAMA Internal Medicine. Mm-hmm. And basically the way that it worked is it was a self-reported study of over 60,000 people. And it went between 1992 and 2012. So it's a long study and involved a lot of people. And it showed that basically, you know, so you had your weekend warriors who met their exercise requirement on the weekends. You had active people who met their exercise requirement throughout the week. And then you have sedentary people. So people who are not meeting that requirement. And so a couple of really important things that it did show was that the weekend warriors had a 40% lower risk of death due to cardiovascular disease over the sedentary group. Mm-hmm. And 30% lower death risk overall, and then 18% lower risk of cancer. So, and it showed just a decrease in all causes of mortality. So from a just am I going to live or die standpoint, being a weekend warrior is better than nothing. So, you know, and that was the important thing to take out of this study, is that it is really important for your health. And then
I just want to mention one thing on the semantics of being a weekend warrior.
Yeah.
We know that everyone has a different schedule. And for some people, your weekend might be Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah. Okay. That's
so
fair
if you're
enough.
A weekend warrior and all you can do is work out Wednesday and Thursday, the same idea applies to those people. And there are a lot of people, like people who are chefs or something like that, or cooks, and so they have these odd schedules and they're off at the middle of the week. So or freelancers like me, and they just happen to have these 2 days off. So for people that are like that, just don't get too caught up on the term weekend. It's, you know, we really mean your 2 days to work out.
No, that's fair. But that's it. So kind of you know, ramming all your exercise into 1 or 2 days, that's, you know, doesn't matter whether it's actually on Saturday or Sunday. And then a couple other studies. So, you know, there's the important part here is we're talking about health, but there actually was a study that focused a little bit more on performance. So not a lot, but a little bit. So a 2006 study, it was the way it was run, it was 40 people. You had three groups again, sedentary. They were all healthy people, but healthy, but not active.
Okay.
Split into three groups. So one group stayed sedentary. one group was active, one group was active, but they met the requirement over the course of 2 days. And this was done over 12 weeks. And they measured their VO2 max before and after, and they found that the both the active and the weekend warrior groups, they increased their VO2 max equally, but it was increased over the sedentary group.
Sure.
And for the VO2 max, it's basically just your heart's ability to extract oxygen from the blood. So it's really important, not only for health, but also if you're going to get into performance and, you know, athletics, that's a very important thing to measure is how, where your VO2 max is. So that was another study that kind of showed that it does also, it can affect your fitness levels and not just your health, which obviously is the most important part of all of this.
All right. So what can we take from these studies?
So what we can take, so there's a lot of research on weekend warrior, being a weekend warrior, being good for your health, being,
or at least
good,
better for your health than being, nothing.
Yeah, there's tons of research that any exercise is better than nothing. And there's a lot of research, especially with this study coming out, that being a weekend warrior is good for you. And as far as staying away from dying, it can be as good for you as working out during the week. So it's more about the numbers. Do you get the amount of the recommended exercise just for, again, not dying, for mortality?
Okay.
So problem I have, and the problem that I see and we see throughout the fitness industry, is taking us one study and then embellishing on it. And so I think that's where you want to be a little careful, is the one study I referenced about the VO2 max, it's 40 people. It wasn't a major study. So there's not a lot.
How could you gain?
There's not a lot of research out there to say being a weekend warrior will help increase your performance, or will help you with bodybuilding, or will help you with any sport or activity, or look better, this or that. Like, that's still, the jury's still out on that. Mm-hmm. So the fear is that then, you know, you get companies that will say, you know, do this 10-minute workout. And that's the other key, is that you have to meet your fitness requirement in the weekend, but you'll get people saying, do this 10-minute workout twice a week and you'll be in amazing shape, and they'll sell whatever product they need to sell based on that. So that's the issue that I have, or, you know, that what I see is just kind of the industry taking hold of it and saying, you know, promising results that are unrealistic based on research that has nothing to do with, you know, gaining 30 pounds of muscle.
So what if we take a step back, and instead of looking at it in terms of the amount of time that's put in, we look at the amount of exercises and reps or sets? Because remember, we had that question from that guy that was looking to build mass.
Yeah.
And what you said was you're going to have to do a significant amount of work. Now, we know that the human body is only capable of doing so much.
Yeah.
Right? Yes, you could train it to do quite a bit. But what if in those 2 days you get a significant amount of exercises? You do, you know, you go through everything. You do your bench press, you do like an incline press, you do rows, squats, deadlifts, you know, bicep curl. You just go through it, and you do a significant amount of repetitions of each. Maybe just as much or somewhat close to the number of reps that someone might do if working during the week, working out during the week. Like, what about comparing it to
get to, for getting results?
For getting results.
I mean,
you get results if you cram it in that
I don't
way?
Know.
Because we know the body needs
there's
rest.
There's not enough research to say. I'm sure. I think part of it's person specific. You know, people. We both know people who work out sporadically and look great, or have, you know, or just seem to have the genetics for it. And then we know people who put in tons and tons of effort and make very, very little progress. So, you know, again, there's no real research to say that compares, let's say, to the same program done in 2 days versus over the course of, you know, a week, and how you get, you know, X, Y, and Z results, or how the, you know, if muscles will grow at the same rate. So we really just, the jury's out on it. I would say you can get a lot done. Sure, you can work out twice a week and do a lot and still get results. I don't know how much, and I don't, there's not a lot to back
it up. So now, maybe not in terms of performance or building muscle, but what about burning calories? What if you do a lot of running?
Yeah.
and you burn calories, wouldn't that still go into the calories
on a
weekly basis?
Sure, and we've always talked about that, but when it comes to weight loss, like, I'm not a big, like, how many calories did you burn during the workout person, because that can be made up easily with the diet.
Sure.
So I wouldn't be as concerned about that. Now, if you're trying to, if your goal is to run 10 miles, then you got to run your 10 miles or do 5 miles each day or whatever it is. So if you have a certain mileage goal, you just got to do that. I wouldn't be too concerned about the, you know, the amount of calories you're burning, because you're going to put that back on.
Sure.
But the other thing to consider is when you exercise, your metabolic rate doesn't drop back down to normal. So if you have a normal metabolic rate and you exercise, there's a steady drop back down. So if you do that, if let's say you do all of your work in that one workout, you're still getting that steady drop down. Where if you do it over five workouts, then you have that steady drop five times. So theoretically, like, you have a little bit, you burn a little bit more because you have to come down five times versus one time. But it doesn't matter, really.
We know that working out more consistently is the best option. But it's just not an option for everyone.
Yeah.
So now, we were sort of talking about some of the benefits, but there's going to be risks that come along with this as well, especially if you're really hitting it hard.
Yeah. So the main drawback are acute injuries. So strains and sprains tend to be the main things that you're going to see with kind of the weekend warriors. There are a number of theories. There's no real study that then examines that. But, I mean, just think about it. If you're sedentary, you're not active, you're kind of in a deconditioned state. And then you go from that zero to 100, you know, and especially if you're not kind of properly warming up and preparing yourself, it's really easy to injure yourself. One thing to think is, like, your VO2 max, again, we talked about, that drops significantly from not exercising. So if you don't let's say you're really fit and you don't exercise for a week to 10 days, it will drop. You build it back up quickly, but it'll drop. So to me, part of it, and this is my own thought, is that part of it is that you just get less fit over that week of not exercising. Your just body just gets deconditioned, and then you go right back into it. So it's a little bit harder to bring yourself back. So, there's that. There's fatigue. So the muscles fatigue a little bit quicker. And then if you're trying to cram it in and you're working a little bit harder, I think there's just a recipe, a lot of variables, but there's a recipe for injuring yourself. And again, that in itself hasn't been examined, but it's kind of a common sense thing. So if you're somebody who is a weekend warrior, think the really important thing to keep in mind is properly warming up, maybe spend a little extra time warming up. So, spend 15 minutes just, starting with a walk into a light jog to really get yourself nice and loose. If you're doing strength training, do warm up sets. So if you're bench pressing, don't just jump in and bench a lot of weight. Start with the bar, start with something light and build yourself up so that you're really kind of getting the joints ready for it. The neuromuscular system also kind of has to be ready for movement. So if you're not training and then you go to training, you've got to retrain your brain and body to kind of work together. So just doing things in a way, it's like you almost have to slow things down a little bit to prepare yourself for the exercise. And, and then know your body. So if you feel like you're fatiguing, slow it down. Don't try to push through it, because it's just going to increase your risk of energy. Do you have any other thoughts on how somebody can...
This is very gym wits, right in the planning, but look at your schedule for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
Now, we know that you're a weekend warrior because you can't get to the gym. First off, check out our office survival guide, because we've talked about being, if you're in an office or you're really isolated, you're far from the gym, what are some things that you can do? What are some things that you can do? You can always do little bits of activity. You can try to walk extra. You can stretch. You can stretch while you're watching TV. Throw in maybe 2 days a week. Say you're going to do 100 push-ups. You're going to do some crunches. You're going to do something like that. Those little bits, while they doesn't seem like much, really go far, and it'll help at the very least keep your body a little more in the game, so when you get into the gym, you're going to feel better. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's a good idea.
Designing a home workout of just, push-ups, some dips, sit-ups, maybe a few squats is really good.
Yeah.
And if you could, maybe there's a way for you to get to the gym on Wednesday in the middle of the week for 25 minutes, just to do 25 minutes. What do you think about that? So you're a weekend warrior, but if you were able to get to the gym one day, even if it's for 25 minutes, do you think that would make a big significant difference in the middle of the week?
Sure, it'll help with anybody, but if we're being realistic and we're kind of sticking with our theme of weekend warriors, I would say the two things that probably help if you can't get into the gym is trying to increase your activity level wherever you can, as far as walking, let's say, instead of taking the train, or taking the stairs instead of taking an elevator, and then stretching, you know, keep your body loose and focus on your posture. And I say this as my shoulders are, you know, hunched over, but you know, if you can correct little things whatever you can, whether it's your posture or your movement or walking from place to place, standing up, walk to the cubicle next door instead of calling or emailing the person, like little things like that can kind of help contribute to your overall health. So there was one other thing though, that we want to make sure that people are clear about, and which is why I kept going over, like, what are the exercise requirements? And there's a difference between being a weekend warrior and a sporadic exerciser. So we both know people who like exercise here and there, but that can actually be bad for your health. I'm going to reference, there have been a few studies, I'll reference one. This is from the American Heart Association. It was back in 2000 when it was published, but basically it was conducted at health clubs or using with the help of health clubs, 320 facilities, combined 3 million members, and they covered or tracked 182 million workouts. So they found over these this happened between 1997 and 1998. So they found over these 182 million workouts, there were 71 fatal heart attacks or strokes, which we both know this. Activity, there is an inherent risk of exercise. It's minimal, it's tiny, but there is a bit of a risk. So what they did find was that half of the people who died or had the fatal heart attack or stroke had exercised less than once a week. So they were exercising sporadically. And they also found that these people, generally, they were older age and they had one or more risk factors of heart disease. So that's something to consider, you know, as well, is, you know, if you're going to be a weekend warrior, it's got to be consistent, because if you have any risk factors, then doing the sporadic, I'm going to run to the gym, work really hard, and then I'm not going to go back for 2 weeks, and then you all over the place, it can actually be detrimental to your health. So you want to make sure, if you're kind of categorizing yourself, like, you still got to meet those minimum requirements. It's not, you know, you it's not about just kind of going here and there. Being like a quote weekend warrior means that you're going to cram your 150 hours or your 75 hours of vigorous activity into that time.
Yeah.
All right. So it's
interesting stuff.
I think that's it for, if anyone has any questions, please shoot us an email, or if you have anything
warrior?
If you're a weekend warrior and you have questions on anything we can help, or you can help us, or any advice as a weekend warrior, since I don't think Justin is. Well, maybe sometimes you are. If you fit your definition of like one or two days throughout the week.
Yeah.
Might be.
What do you think would be the product or the service? I've actually already seen books.
Just weekend warrior workouts.
Workout 2 days.
There'll be apps. There'll be some product. You know, we'll see it. I mean, we're already seeing it.
Do you have some guy, like, who would the face of it be?
I don't know.
Like what would the model be like? Some guy in a suit that could come out because they're trying to go to that demographic.
I don't know.
And then he like takes off his suit and he's like, I used to be this. I could see it now. I used to be this. And they're like, yeah. Social.
Okay, I see.
Some
yeah.
schlubby
like
guy.
Like an executive, like a CEO type.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But then like what you don't notice is that like in the after pictures, like his hair is done differently. Yeah. He's tanned and like all these other things that go along with it, right?
And that combined with the fact that he's probably not a weekend warrior.
And that he's not a weekend warrior to begin with, yeah.
All right, well, we've touched on as much as we can for now with this. So we got an Ask the Trainer, right? We got a question.
Yes.
You going to read it?
Yes. Okay, from Rob Kay. Hey, Ryan and Justin, love the podcast. I am a pretty athletic guy. I play basketball twice a week. I work out a few days, and I try to run regularly. This guy's definitely not a weekend warrior. I think I have weak ankles as I'm always twisting my ankle. I've never had a major injury like a break or a tear, but I regularly sprain my ankle. Do you have any recommendations on exercises or footwear for someone with ankle problems? Thanks a lot.
That's actually enough for an episode. Some of this, but we'll keep it quick to answer it. So
just the first thing about a sprain.
Yeah.
I don't I'm not a doctor, so is a sprain a medical term?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know? So
is there an official term, or is it just mean?
No, so first thing I would say is, you know, obviously if there's there might be an underlying problem if someone's constantly injuring themselves. So if there's an underlying problem, that's something that you want to talk to a doctor or PT and see if there are other strategies to correct. So what I'm going to give kind of from my own experience, kind of anecdotally and from what I've read, but I think first off, if there's an underlying medical issue, that's something that you want to get checked out. So I would recommend just getting it checked out, because if you sprain it a lot, that's, you know, it's not abnormal for basketball, but anyway, I'll give you a little bit of an anecdote for myself, and then I'll tie it in. So we played a lot of basketball and baseball when we were younger, and basketball, at least when we were younger, it seems similar today, but basketball and baseball footwear tended to be pretty structurally large, like kind of cover the whole foot, high tops, almost acted like a brace for the foot at times. And, you know, not coincidentally, like I would sprain my ankles all the time. I was always twisting my ankles as a kid. Now, you fast forward as an adult.
It's only because my crossovers were
slick
that I twist your ankle.
So as an adult, I stopped playing basketball, baseball, because I was not very good at those, but I ended up practicing Muay Thai, which I'm not very good at either, but the one characteristic of Muay Thai is that you train barefoot, so everything you do is barefoot. It's dynamic, you're moving around a lot, requires agility, requires footwork, but you're doing it barefoot. And in training Muay Thai, I've never really sprained my ankle, not badly, like anytime I've twisted it, I've never hurt it. So
you consider you're also on a mat most.
No,
of the time.
I used to be hardwood. There was hardwood. So different time. But mats are actually softer. I've actually had more issues on a mat.
I believe because there's no way to get foot trapped or something.
Yeah, and it's softer, so there's a little more give, so you can turn your ankle. Why would this be the case? It doesn't make sense. Why, when you're wearing something that acts as a brace, why would you sprain your ankle more often? So basically, the idea is that, you know, it comes down to a lot to proprioception. We've talked about this before. So proprioception is kind of like your body's dashboard, right? It tells you your awareness of where you are in space. So it's like, how fast am I moving? What direction am I going in? You're getting feedback. Kind of there's this feedback loop with the body and the environment. And when you're wearing, let's say, something that's very thick and structurally very strong and that kind of braces you, you lose some of that feedback. Right, your feet aren't really feeling the ground because there's a big barrier. Your ankle doesn't have to really do much because there's a brace, almost something bracing it. So you're losing a lot of that feedback. So you then start to rely, instead of on your body's natural kind of proprioception or natural awareness, you start to rely on that support. So what happens if you're playing basketball is, yeah, it'll protect you most of the time. But if there's a situation where it doesn't protect you and now you have to rely on your actual the joint and your own awareness, you don't have the timing and the quickness to take care of it. And then when you turn on it, you turn on it and you turn on it bad because you can't protect yourself. Now, compare that to somebody who is playing a sport or an activity that requires little or no footwear. You're constantly developing a kind of a awareness between the body, your brain, and your environment, because everything you do requires you to adjust subtly to every little thing. And you turn a little bit, you've got to adjust to that. You know, so when you're training barefoot, you're actually developing, you know, an awareness that when you do turn wrong or when something goes wrong, you're able to quickly respond and correct. So even like the few times where I've turned my ankle training, like Muay Thai or practicing, I always catch myself and I'm able to correct myself. So that's the idea or the theory that, you know, basically, you know, that the extra support is inhibiting your natural proprioception. So what I would say, now getting back to Rob's question, is with this in mind, there are a couple things you can do. So, you know, A, make sure there's no underlying issue. And if you're still injured, get it taken care of, right? So once you make sure that, you know, structurally you're okay, my recommendation would be, you know, don't start playing basketball barefoot right away. That's not a good idea. But I would start to maybe practice with lighter shoes, with something thinner, even like the Vibrams, like Five Fingers, or something that is not protecting you a lot. Work on agility drills. There's a good book, like Speed, Agility, Quickness. It's been, you know, the million editions at this point, but, you know, work on agility drills, work on your movement, practice shooting around with something that's less support, and then slowly start to lower the support that you're actually using when you're playing basketball. And that might help you, because then as you develop your own body's proprioception, you'll rely less on the support from the ankle weights and I mean the shoes, and rely more on your body. And one example, again, it's you see basketball players, they sprain their ankles all the time. Soccer players, you don't hear it nearly as much because they wear their footwear is lighter, and they tend to be able to catch themselves better. Even though it's in many ways more violent, you know, they're kicking all the time, they're crashing feet into each other. You don't hear nearly as much about ankle injuries in soccer as you do in basketball. Hmm. Which you'd think it'd be the other way around, but that's because they've developed that ability to that awareness that a lot of times you're not going to get if you're basically bracing your foot.
One thing I would like to add is that your joints, your ankles, very, very sensitive. So if you mention that you regularly sprained your ankle, maybe you're getting back into it too quickly. I remember I had a grappling match where a guy got me in an ankle lock for a while, and sort of it wasn't he cranked on it, but it didn't get me at first, you know, and that so I was in it for a long time, and I probably just should have tapped, but I was trying to work different things and get out of it and whatnot, and my God, if that didn't go on for like 4 or 5 months, mm-hmm. where my ankle was killing me. Same thing, one time someone put me and did a wrist thing and it jerked it and my wrist hurt me for like 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
These things don't heal that quickly.
Yeah.
So is there a chance that maybe you got back into it without giving your ankle a chance to heal?
Yeah, that's
properly?
A great point, because I think often if you're used to playing a sport or being athletic, it's when you're hurt, it sucks to be out, and it's you'll. And I know so many people who come back too soon. There's a guy, train his wife, and he's about 51, and he loves playing basketball. And he had surgery like a few weeks. I mean, it wasn't major surgery, but it was. You know, he still had surgery on a knee that's been bothering him for years, like a few weeks ago. And then he was back playing basketball the other day, and I was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I felt okay today." And then the next day, like his wife was telling me, his knee was hurting him. So you know, that's a great point that you want to make sure that. If you do have an injury, that rehab it properly and come back when you're at full strength. Don't come back when you're at like 75% strength, because you're not going to get better like that.
Oh, you make it worse.
Yeah.
Now, what about like an ankle brace or thing? Do you recommend those, I mean, or do you think it could make it worse?
It depends. It's the same thing like wearing a weight belt. If you wear something that is like light material that kind of cush that you feel but doesn't brace you. That can sometimes give you feedback, like as far as feeling the joint and the position that you're in. So sometimes the feedback you get from an elastic kind of ankle, not a brace, but something like if you wrap some elastic around, if you get like an ankle, I'm forgetting the name, what would you call it? Like ankle, I know. Whatever. Something elastic that fits around your ankle. Yeah. If you wear that, but it's not supporting it, then the feedback you get from that, the kind of sensory feedback you get can potentially help you kind of positioning and feeling where the joint is. Same thing with like weight belts. Weight belts aren't great unless you're lifting heavy, heavy weights, because then you're not relying on the core to actually brace your midsection. So, but if you wear like an elastic band around the waist, that can help you press, like kind of contract or brace the abdomen in a way and give you feedback that you're actually bracing properly. So yes, so wearing something can help, but unless you need the brace because the structure, let's say for example, Rob K's, there is an underlying issue with his ankle. He may need to wear something that braces the ankle to keep it more secure. But sure. But again, that's an issue for somebody above my pay grade to determine. So,
and I guess one more thing when it comes to exercises, right? You can't really work out the ankle, but you can sort of stretch the joint.
You can do lots of stuff. I mean, you know, there are muscles and tendons and ligaments and connective tissue that all can be, you know, worked on in different ways. So there are things you can do
the sort of circles with your ankles.
Yeah, you could do stretches. You could work there's a tibialis anterior, the peroneals. There's a lot of muscles in that area that needs to be worked as well. That's a whole other discussion. If we talk about like that's something we can actually do in a whole episode on. Yeah. So let's not talk about much of that, because
the muscles that's actually most important to prevent this injury would actually be the core. as you mentioned, by having a strong core and, as you mentioned, proprioception, balance, and just overall control over your body, that will prevent this injury by knowing how to turn. Balance, you know, brace yourself more than, say, figure that, you know, oh, I could work my leg or do calf raises, like something like that. You would think.
I mean, in context, that's why I mentioned like doing agility drills, because that you've got to train in the kind of context of the activity you plan on participating in. So like just sitting there and doing like some calf stretches and ankle circles, foot circles, like that can be helpful if there's some weaknesses. But if you need to only do things in context in order to get stronger and to fix
also
whatever.
Play virtual reality basketball instead. That would most likely prevent the injury.
With a remote or actually playing like...
No, like with the thing over your head. So you're not actually playing, but you're
just... They have the VR thing, but then they also have like this... I don't think it's on the market yet, but like this round disc... And like they have like these shoes that low friction, so you can run around in your own little VR space, which looks amazing.
That does look good. What if you have a virtual injury? Do you not have any ways of preventing
I don't
that?
Know how to prevent that? All right, I guess it's time for exercise of the week. So what's the exercise of the week? You had an idea.
Well, I thought it was called the soldier squat, but we looked it up and we couldn't find it. So it is the one-legged squat with a kettlebell.
Yeah.
So we're going to do the one-legged squat, and we're going to hold the kettlebell in the opposite arm. Mm-hmm. So if we're squatting with the left leg, we're going to hold the kettlebell in our right arm, and we're going to touch the ground with the kettlebell.
Yeah. Yep. So that's it. It's good. Great exercise. We've talked about the single-leg squats before, and it's one of the best exercises you can do. And the single leg squat is essentially a progression on it, but it's a good way to do it. For some people, it's actually not easier.
No, it is, but it helps you push off a little bit.
Exactly. It helps kind of counterbalance a little bit, and it also allows you to balance. You can kind of tap the kettlebell to the floor. You can also modify it to do like a straight leg deadlift. So instead of squatting, you keep the leg straight and you kind of hinge forward. So there's some cool things to do
with
that.
You can do it with two legs too, if you want to do the one where you're sort of holding it down and you touch it. You're doing a squat and just touch the kettlebell holding with two arms.
So yeah.
It's good too.
Cool. And I'll post that. If you are an app user, you get to see the exercise of the week. And I keep saying I will, but we will get all these exercises of the week on Facebook soon. Justin's got to just commit to meeting me in the gym, and we'll get these down so you guys can have our list of, I guess, whatever the... Since we've been doing it, I think we have like 13 or 14. We got to get these 14 exercises in a YouTube video soon. So that's it. As usual, if you have any questions... Shoot us an email at thegymwits@gmail.com. Rate us, download the app. However you use, we're on everything at this point. So whatever you use, please rate us. It helps us rank, and I'm ranking higher and higher. So that's it. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, aka Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gymwits.